Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then we watch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again.
With me as ever is my son, Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, we always say I'm tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah, I feel that.
I'm going to go with, I'm so tired that I'm more tired than Jock McTired, who was once internationally tired for Scotland.
Wow, yeah. I did not know that.
Well, he was the world tire champion in 1887.
Wow.
And I'm currently more tired than him.
So you're the current champion?
Well, I'd like to think so, but I have no frame of reference for that, to be honest.
Okay.
But I'd like to think that I am the champion of tired.
Let's go with it then. Yeah.
Let's go with that. I am the champion of tired, but I'm also very happy to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, me too.
And you know what? We have had so many listener questions that I've decided not to use any of them.
Oh, okay.
So in a change from the regular format, I have a question for you.
Oh.
So you sent me yesterday a WhatsApp message.
Did I?
And the WhatsApp message was a picture. Yeah. Occasionally.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And it was a picture of the 25th anniversary of Chicken Run.
Yes.
To which my response was, well, that makes me feel old.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, what movie makes you feel old?
There's a lot, I think. I don't know. I feel like, again, just textbook answer for me, Spider-Man 1, the original Tobey Maguire 1, I don't know if it's aged perfectly. And I don't know, because I like that one, but it's so old, it makes me feel really old. I think there's probably a lot now.
Is it 2002, that one?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's 23 years old. I mean, that's a quarter of a century almost.
Yeah, I mean, even like, I suppose some of the Harry Potter films as well. Because they don't feel like they're that old, but because they didn't end that long ago, it's probably about a decade now, I suppose. But I don't know, they just feel old.
But the first one must be like 2000, 1999, something like that.
I think it might be 2001, but I'm not sure, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is an interesting thing, isn't it? I was thinking about this when you sent me that. And the movie that makes me feel very old is Back to the Future.
Yeah. Funny enough, I thought I was going to rewatch that the other day.
Because it's such a great movie, it's classic, but it's set in 1985. When they go into the future, they go into 2015, which is now 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so if you made Back to the Future now, okay, and you went and he went back 30 years, he'd go back to 1995.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
That is weird. And if he goes 15 years into the future, it's 2000 and whatever it is, 2040. That's just crazy. And so there are some movies that make me feel old, but the 25th anniversary of Chicken Run, that did make me think, really? 25 years ago?
Funny enough, Back to the Future Day of 2015, this will timestamp the episode, was only a couple of days ago, 10 years
ago. That's right, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it, how their prediction of the future was so utterly incorrect.
Yeah. Oh, there goes a flying car.
Yeah, flying cars, your little fusion reactor on the back of the car, hoverboards and everything else. They predicted nothing accurately.
It's weird, though, because I think because of that, they have tried to make some of them. So I know there's self-tying shoes, but they're not readily available to everyone.
No. And it is, isn't it really interesting? We're getting really off topic here.
Yeah.
You go back and you predict the future. You don't predict what we actually got. You might predict a mobile phone and you might predict a digital camera, but you wouldn't predict a digital phone that's also a digital camera at the same time. And all of those things, if you go back even just 20 years, you would have your phone, a camera, a sat nav. These were all separate things. And they're all amazing. And the real genius is you just put them all together in one single device. And nobody saw that coming. There's no
That's
internet.
Quite impressive.
There's no internet in Back to the Future Part 2.
Wow, what a perfect world.
and they use a fax machine.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. There we go. Not even an email. So, yeah, anyway, we've got totally off topic there. But the things that make you feel old. But it is interesting, isn't it? Some of the films that you and I will be continuing to review on this podcast are now 20 years old, 25 years old. And yet, to me, they feel like part of my life, my existence.
Yeah, like Transformers 3, which we're going to talk about, it doesn't feel like that long ago to me for some reason.
No, and actually, it is. It is. It's what? It's like 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. It's crazy. I think one of the things that I saw this meme, as you often see on the internet, and the meme was that Bryan Adams sings of the summer of 69. Yeah. And I think we're now officially closer to the summer of 2069.
That's weird.
That is weird. Anyway, moving on. We do have to talk about Transformers Dark of the Moon.
We did.
From 2011. And from memory, I gave this a 3. What did you give it?
I gave it a 6 out of 10. I think maybe quite generous. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a good question. Do you think your score will change?
Possibly, but I'm interested to see how the conversation goes.
Yeah, we always have that little hedging of bets there, don't we? Because I'm not sure about whether or not my score will change very much, but it might change a little bit. Let's start, as we typically do, with the cast of Transformers Dark of the Moon. So let's go with your man Shia LaBeouf. We've never quite known how to say his name. What do you make of War Shear in this movie?
I think he's more of the same, but I think what's interesting is it kind of moves along with the character. So, you know, he's a teenager in the first film and he's getting his first job in this one. And it sort of, he's like, he's matured with the character, which sounds ridiculous. But I think he plays it really well in, as someone who's gone through that myself, and you have too. You know, if you feel like you can see yourself in that sort of moment of, you feel like you're big and you're important. Here's your first job, and that's exactly how you'd imagine it happening. So I think he does a really good job. A lot less of the constantly repeating everything and shouting it, which I do appreciate. He seems...
Yeah.
He acts more like the hero role in this one, and I do appreciate that, even though that's the line of the film, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think he's more leading man in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously a very good actor. You know, he's always been quite good. I don't think he's always been best served by the movies and the roles that he takes, but he's a decent actor. And I did find him probably for the first 30 or 40 minutes a bit whiny, shouty in this. There's
right,
a lot of shouting. And he's a bit whiny. And, you know, I mean, we'll move on to the other people in the cast, but he lives in a New York loft. He's got a wealthy, attractive girlfriend. He's got a good degree. He got an award from the president. He does seem to spend quite a lot of time shouting and moaning like the world owes him something.
So that is a good point.
He wasn't, for the first 30 minutes in this movie, as likable as he was in the other two, is what I would say.
Yeah, I think I'll have to agree with that, I suppose. It's gone completely against my point, but no, I agree.
but he's an ordinary looking kid, you know, reasonably clever. Nice parents. And he seems to be able to attract fairly attractive young ladies, let's be honest.
Yeah. There's a line about that in the film, but yeah.
In fact, we can talk about her. Rosie Huntington Whiteley hadn't done much acting before this movie, apparently. I'm not sure she did much acting in the movie. So what did you make of Rosie Huntington Whiteley as the Carly Spencer of the movie?
Bring back Megan Fox.
Well, yeah. Come back, Megan, all is forgiven.
I mean, Megan Fox isn't the greatest actress, but she could do better. I don't know. I don't know if wooden's the right word, because I don't think it's that. I think it's just vacant. It's probably way more harsh than it needs to be. There's a few scenes, I wanted to bring this up, there's a few scenes where she's not the main focus of the shot. So there's soldiers talking in the background, coming up with the plan. And you can see her just sort of standing, looking around as if she hasn't realised they've called action. And it's just a bit, if you look at her, it's like, oh yeah, this is a movie. It's not real. But if you look at everyone else, it's like, okay, here we go. Here's the plan, let's do this. But just jumping in with trivia, apparently, which is obvious, she had no previous acting experience apart from appearing in a Michael Bay directed Victoria's Secret commercial advert.
You don't say.
Yeah, it really just makes sense, doesn't it? It's apparently because of that, though, he was so impressed he cast her on the spot. Impressed by what, though? Well, okay, maybe don't answer that.
Well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. But she isn't great. And she's... I don't want to get sort of bogged down in this conversation because, you know, we live in the modern world and you don't want to say anything desperately inappropriate, but she sort of serves the movie. She does her bit. She's good as the kind of screamy love interest. But I feel like if I'm critical of her and her performance and her character, that I really think that we should be more critical of the filmmakers that put her in that position. So it's very easy for us to say, oh, she wasn't great, she was eye candy, blah, blah, blah. But that's not us saying that. That's not us being old-fashioned and desiring to be cancelled. That's us being forced into that position by a movie maker that's effectively made us do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is just that, isn't it? It's just... I said this, I don't know if it was on the Transformers episode we did, but I've said this before, where it makes, maybe not all the teenage boys, but it makes a lot of the defense of, I'm just watching it for the robots, and it makes it really difficult and awkward. I think they've improved upon that mechanic later on with other live-action Transformers films.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that really annoys me about the recast and adding her to the story is that we have to then again sit through the who's going to be the first to say I love you storyline. And it could easily be avoided, but they bring it back. And I don't know if they bring it back because it's a new character or if they just ran out of ideas to introduce this character. Realistically, I suppose this film does need the female lead though, but in some aspects you could take her out of it.
Absolutely. And nothing would change if you took her out of it, except I suppose his motivation is to go back to the city to rescue her. Yeah. But even that is making a demand of us, of an audience, that maybe is no longer fashionable, that this woman needs to be rescued. And I just thought it's really interesting how badly that particular aspect of the movie has aged. And I'm far from woke, for want of a better expression, and I'm desperately trying not to get myself cancelled by the things that I'm saying here, but it just all felt a bit unnecessary and a little bit demeaning, and it didn't ruin the movie because it's Michael Bay and it's big robots punching each other, but I did think, I don't know that you would do this now.
A weird observation that I made with this film this time around is, again, I don't want to like cross an inappropriate line, by the end of the movie, yeah, she's got a few like scuff marks on her face, but she's more or less perfect, I want to say. Whereas in Transformers 2, after all of these battles and things like that, they didn't do that to Megan Fox.
No,
and I don't know if it's a commitment thing about the actress, or if it's just a look at this perfect thing, a perfect person. You know what I mean? But yeah, it seems a bit weird.
We'll finish this point, I hope, because we don't want to go on too much about it, but lest we be accused ourselves of being inappropriate, this is a movie where her introduction to the movie is a shot of her bottom.
Yeah, that's been criticized a lot.
So don't drag us into the gutter with what you're doing. That's you have made us feel this way about that character.
Yeah.
All of that said, it is, again, for a Michael Bay shouty movie, a quite extraordinary cast of supporting actors. So we know that John Turturro is good value. We know that Patrick Dempsey is good value. Kevin Dunn. John Malkovich.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand. I mean, you know, she's considered one of the finest actors of a generation. You know, she's won Oscars and everything. And yet they're all lining up to be in a Michael Bay movie.
And just, we're probably going to get to this point at some point anyway, but even like Leonard Nimoy, who's just there to do a voice.
Yeah. I mean, we have to sort of have that moment about Leonard Nimoy. I mean, all of the voices in this movie are great, but I'd forgotten he was in it. And I thought, is that Leonard Nimoy? And I thought, it has to be Leonard Nimoy. But I then looked it up on the internet. And then after that, you can't unhear that it's Leonard Nimoy.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, I just, you know, what a guy.
It's just reminded me, actually, that I think he was in the original Transformers cartoon movie.
I think he was.
It's a different character, was he not
the original Optimus Prime?
I think he was
or
Galvatron.
Or something like that. Okay. I knew he was in it. I knew that was one of his many jobs in between Star Trek gigs. He did that.
There is a funny thing about this movie, though, which is the little shot of Star Trek where his Spock's going nuts. It's really good foreshadowing, but as a kid, I didn't get it, and you clearly got it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that reveal was of Sentinel being the bad guy. I didn't see coming, but everyone else, and even now, including yourself, could predict it because Spock goes nuts.
Yeah, I think I probably did see that. But even the voices of the Transformers, you know, Hugo Weaving, Peter Cullen, obviously.
Yeah.
Peter Cullen's a legend. Robert Foxworth. These are some proper, really good actors doing these voices. My favorite casting choice was when Buzz Aldrin appeared. I'd forgotten he was in it.
Yeah, I think that's a cool little Easter egg cameo, whatever you want to call it. But it sort of ties the whole story being set in reality together, I think. Yeah.
I mean, it is an excellent cast who are probably not in service of a great script.
Yeah.
But I just love the fact that there is something I really like about someone like Frances McDormand being so committed to what she's doing in something so utterly pointless. I mean, I've seen her do some great things, and yet in this, it's just like, I'm loving it. And they just all seem to be having a really good time doing it.
You've got to understand the commitment that these actors are doing just talking to tennis balls. And I think they sell it in such a real way that even though it's a terrible script, they're acting like it's real. And you have to really appreciate that from some people.
You do. And picking up on that point and then moving on from cast, it is a terrible script.
See, this is weird because I think it's a terrible script, but a decent story. So you've got the story there. You've got somebody sits down in a pitch meeting, or even Michael Bay says, this is what I want to do, A to C, or Z, or whichever letter of the alphabet you choose. And all of a sudden, it's just, how do you write it? Terribly. And it's just, it's there, but it's not there.
It's like all of these things, isn't it? I mean, the Transformers operate on, for me, I mean, the Transformers are probably the ultimate MacGuffin.
Yeah.
So they themselves are MacGuffins, and yet you introduce MacGuffin upon MacGuffin in this movie. So you've got the thing on the moon who just happens to control the leader, and then you've got the MacGuffin which only works if you put it in a particular tower. And there's just you can write this nonsense. And you can perform it with conviction, but you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. For the first 45 minutes of the movie, I didn't know what was happening. I couldn't. Right. I'm not an idiot. I couldn't follow it. I was like, I know. I don't know what's happening. I didn't understand it. And it was only sort of when we got towards the kind of sort of act two and act three of the movie, I still didn't really understand what was going on. But by that point, it's Michael Bay, so I don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. See, I'm kind of the opposite, and I think that this is a movie where I appreciate it being half like setup and then half action. So it's weird that I wanted the MacGuffin thing. This sort of bothers me on later rewatches with Transformers 3 because it's as if they want it to make sense, but it can't. So all of a sudden, the thing that can revive Sentinel is the thing that is the MacGuffin that they got from the second film. But apparently, this was the Megatron's plan the whole time, was to get Sentinel to bring back the planet, etc., etc. Where does the Fallen sit within that plan? Because surely that was the original plan, but oh, now this is the plan. Like, it's just so stupid and confusing. Why suddenly make that the be-all and end-all of this whole thing?
Absolutely. And yeah, it doesn't make a great deal of sense, but that's okay because it's not really supposed to. I had a moment of, I don't think it's revelation, that's too strong, But I did wonder why it was called Dark of the Moon.
Yeah.
And obviously I understand that it's because of where the thing is on the moon. And then I realized they can't call it Dark Side of the Moon because everybody thinks it's a Pink Floyd album.
Exactly. <yeah.
laughs> So, yeah. And in fact, they probably can't call it Dark Side of the Moon. So when it's being pitched, I can see pitch meetings in my head. So you've got your exec, and what's it called? Dark Side of the Moon. Well, you can't call it that. Why not? Well, everybody think Pink Floyd. Okay, we'll just drop Side. What? Dark of the Moon. Sure, why not? Okay, fine. And then that's what it's called, because it makes no sense. It is the Dark Side of the Moon, but you can't call it that.
Barely takes place on the moon, to be honest.
Well, that is true. The moon itself becomes the MacGuffin. But like as I said, when you get into it, when you finally get to the bit where it all starts to kick off, I really stopped caring, because the last hour of the movie, and I think it probably is an hour, is no story whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's nothing happening with the plot except we've got to rescue this person. So we're going to go and rescue. You can't. You're mad. But okay, I'm going. It's a 16-hour drive. I'll drive you. I mean, they could have showed us the whole 16 hours for what was going to happen. And then when you finally get there, it's just one minor crisis after another. So we're in a building. The building's collapsed. The windows are broken. The chairs are rolling. And that's it. Nothing is actually happening with the forward momentum of the plot until we get to, there's only one beacon. It's that one. You've got to stop it.
See, I'll defend the whole building sequence.
Go on, defend it if you can.
I was going to say something else first. It's so flawed in the way that it works that you get Optimus Prime turning up to do the big heroic thing. All of a sudden you go, hang on, he can just stop this entire thing. What are we going to do? Tie him up on some cables.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots, can fight whatever he wants, stuck in some cables for about half an hour. Okay.
I also love the bit as well where, oh my goodness, they're all dead. No, we're not. So the big reveal is that they didn't. Well, obviously they didn't die. It's only halfway through the movie.
Yeah, don't mind us. We're just standing slightly over here. Yeah. Giant robots. Yeah. No one knows we're alive though. Like, all these fancy cars. Yeah.
This was part of our plan all of the time. Yeah, I have to say, Optimus Prime, who I love, is not the best at hiding.
No. Robots barely in disguise.
What's that big blue and red truck over there? Is that like... Nah, it's not Optimus. Don't worry about that. Yeah, don't.
No, there's only one other truck like that in the world.
Yeah. What about the black and yellow Corp? No, that's definitely not Bumblebee.
Can't be.
No. If they really want to be robots in disguise, they should just become like a Kia Rio.
Yeah. Fiat. What's that really popular car that everyone sort of had? It's gone out of my head.
I don't know.
You could pick any car, to be honest, at this point.
Nissan Juke.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you know. I mean, the car that's the furthest away from cool that you could possibly get. And terrible, terrible hiding.
That would be in disguise. In defense of the building scene, right, there's a really long explanation that I could do, or there's the short one. And the short one, I think, is if you had to be in any action movie and live it and the outcome still be the same, I think this is the one I'd pick. Because it's scary, yeah, but it's also kind of fun. Like, imagine having to jump out of a tilting building, which is, yeah, it's ridiculous. But I think that whole set piece is a lot of fun. So yeah. I think if I had to live it, sure, let's go for it. If I had to watch it, sure, let's go for it. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't always fit, but it does work. Actually, speaking of action sequences, did you know that they've ripped one straight from a different Michael Bay movie?
I did not, no.
It's the car chase where all the Autobots are fighting those weird Decepticons. It's not a shot-for-shot remake. It is the exact scene from that other Michael Bay film that he did with Hugh McGregor. The name has escaped me. The Island, maybe? It's the same footage, because I think there was an accident or it was too dangerous, so they just reused it and shoved some CGI.
That's cool. I didn't know that. CGI. Let's get onto that. Where do we sit with Transformers: Dark of the Moon on the capital scale?
I don't think it's much different from the other two. It doesn't go backwards, I'd say. Well,
no.
Again, the humans do. It's a bit rubber people, But the Transformers look perfectly fine. I think we've said it before, it's the idea of something that doesn't exist looking like it exists, of which it does perfectly. Although I will say, by this movie, I don't know if it's in the other one as much, the blood just bothers me for some reason. It's like,
yeah,
the colour changing as well. Anyway, what did you think?
I think that the Transformers effect and all the stuff that happens around that, and even falling buildings and the scale of it all, I think CGI has gone backwards in the modern world. I think this is peak CGI. I think you're right to say sometimes a human figure might look a bit fake, but I think it is a 10 on the Cavill scale. I think the special effects are really second to none. I do think as well, I think this is pre-Avengers, isn't it?
By a year, yeah.
Some of the things that come down from space in this movie are very similar to things that come down from space in the first of the Avengers movies. And I think noticeably similar as well.
Yeah, and there's this, I think back then as well, there was a lot of this sky beam thing going on, but the Transformers in this one and the aliens in Avengers and even the droids in Phantom Menace all have the same sort of weakness. You take down the mothership and they all suddenly, that's it, they're all done. They all either get taken away or stopped.
The kind of big things that were coming out of the sky that looked like kind of big, I don't know, woodlouse or whatever, big insect things. Do you know that they're kind of snaky things, and I can't describe them, but they looked exactly like the ones in the Avengers.
Yeah, it sounds really sad and nerdy, but I think they're called Leviathans in Avengers. But I could be completely wrong, but I do know exactly what you mean, because they do look almost identical, yeah.
They are. And it's interesting that this did come first, and I would have thought that Avengers was probably well into development then, if it's only a year. But there, you do think again, like you can see a pitch meeting where someone's saying, "Right, we've got effects, we've got the Avengers. right, what have you got? Oh, I don't know. I just did this for Trent. Yeah, Dad, just use that. No one will notice."
It's almost as if they have like the same assets and just go tweak it a little bit. It'll be fine. No one will notice. Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. How many Oscars do you think this movie was nominated for?
None.
Well, you'll be surprised. It was nominated for 3.
Wow.
Can you guess what they were nominated for? I'll give you a clue. Nobody was nominated for an acting award in this movie. So what do we think?
I want to say best CGI.
Best visual effect, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. Best sound, maybe? Sound design?
Best sound editing.
Oh, okay.
And
soundtrack, maybe Linkin Park got one in there.
Sound mixing.
Oh, okay.
So it was nominated, didn't win any of them, but it did win a few. It won an Annie Award for animation. It won a BMI film for, as you correctly point out, its soundtrack. And it did win a lot, but it did, as we've kind of referenced before, it did do quite well at the Golden Raspberry Awards.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
It didn't win any of the Raspberry Awards, but it was nominated. But it was nominated for brace yourself, Worst Picture, Worst Director, Worst Supporting Actor for Patrick Dempsey, Worst Supporting Actress for Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, Worst Screenplay, Worst Screen Couple, and Worst Screen Ensemble. But he didn't win any of those things. I mean, we've talked about the Razzies before. I do think they're hugely unfair. As long as they're taken in good faith, fine. But it did win a few more things for kind of special effects, and correctly so. But moving on from that very quickly, let's do the thing we always do, which is box office. So it cost $195 million. How much do you think it made at the box office?
Possibly, I want to say twice as much as that. I think it did well.
So you would say around 400 million for...
Well, it seems a bit steep when you put it like that.
Well, this is the thing that staggered me. Brace yourself. On its budget of 195 million, it made $1.1 billion.
Right. Wow.
It is a billion-dollar movie. It was at the time that it was released, it became the fifth highest grossing film in history. And it was the second highest grossing film of 2011 after Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Oh. But it was quite successful. I mean, it was more successful than its two predecessors. It made $1 billion.
That makes sense in a way, I suppose. Yeah, but I think as well, because you have to take into account that the second film had the strikes too. So I can imagine this one being slightly perceived a lot better. Slightly but a lot?
I know what you mean, but it does. I think it does prove a thing, and that is that it doesn't need to be... This is either a criticism or not. It doesn't need to be the most amazing thing in the world to be successful. If you have a formula that wins... You're going to be fine, you know. It's made 10 times its budget, and that's either that either says something negative about the movie going population of the world, or it says something else, which is it's okay for stuff to be awful. It's fine if it's escapism for two and a half hours. It's okay. I don't know, where would you sit on that?
You might have just described pretty much all the Marvel movies in that one sentence.
Yeah.
But no, I agree with you. This is probably the perfect example. Well, maybe Transformers as a franchise is the perfect example of, I'm just going to escape for 2 hours and watch a loud movie. You don't necessarily have to love it. You just have to sit there and be taken away by it. And I think there's elements of these films that do that and do it perfectly, yeah.
It reminds me of, if you go back, I don't know, let's go a long time, then you look at things like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, who were making Jaws and E.T. and Star Wars and things. And these were kind of the great, they were the blockbusters. They were not well regarded. They were very popular, but critically maybe they weren't, you know, the same as other movies that were coming out around about that time. And now, 50 years after the event, we laud them as being masterpieces. And we talk about Jaws as, you know, the pinnacle of directing an action movie or whatever. And maybe, I don't know whether it's fair to put Michael Bay as a director into that category, but there's no question he is financially successful.
Exactly, yeah.
But I don't know whether, would you put Michael Bay up there with Steven Spielberg?
Maybe a, like list adjacent.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. It's like, you know, like when in the world of politics, you know, you can either have a meeting with somebody, you can meet them in a corridor, or you can have what's called a brush by. And the brush by is when you get to sort of have a brief handshake, and that's your moment. I think Michael Bay deserves a brush by with Steven Spielberg. There you go. So we did mention the soundtrack briefly. What did you make of the soundtrack? It did win awards, apparently.
This is one of those interesting soundtracks for me where I always return to it and I love it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is the best Transformers live action soundtrack, because I'm torn between Dark of the Moon and Age of Extinction, because I love that soundtrack. But I think ultimately the one I always go back to is Dark of the Moon. And I think it's just perfectly laid out in the sense of, this is an action epic. But even the sort of quieter moments, it sort of works in a family of the other two, builds upon it, and also just, it's nice. I like it. It's definitely one of the soundtracks that I would go to and listen to most of the time, yeah.
It is a good soundtrack. And I think as well, what something else that this does very well is that it does always mix very well together, the soundtrack itself, with then the modern music that it sort of chooses to put in. If you take out all of the incidental music, the rock music, there isn't much soundtrack, but it is nonetheless a really good soundtrack. And he tends to work with Michael Bay quite a lot, doesn't he? Your man Steve Jablonski is his name. We'll give him a name check. So, hey, you must have many pieces of trivia about this movie and out-of-pocket takes, and dare I add, maybe even some controversial opinions.
I do have a controversial opinion, actually.
Shall we do it? So just in case you're new to the podcast at season 3, we'll give a brief explanation. Sam's controversial opinion is this. Sam will give me his controversial opinion. And if you hear the controversial opinion, I've allowed it. If it's so controversial that we'd get cancelled, you'll just hear me say, No. So let's go for Sam's controversial opinion.
See, I'm not sure about this one because people might agree. The moon landing was faked because this actually happened, so they covered it up.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna keep it in. There is some debate to be had about the moon landings. There's a very famous piece of footage actually where I think it might actually be Buzz Aldrin, where somebody randomly stops him in the street and accuses him of being a cheat and a liar for faking the moon landings. And I think Buzz Aldrin just punches him in the face.
I want to see that.
That's the thing. You got. It's one of them. I think if you look up Buzz Aldrin punch man in face, you'll get some. And that's what it is. I don't think the moon landings were faked. I think they actually did it. But I can see why people would say that they were.
Yeah, I mean, you can see both sides of the argument. Yeah,
it does seem an awful lot to make it up. Although, if you think about the moon landing, and I don't very often, but if you do think about the moon landing, they managed to fly three human beings 200,000 miles through the depths of space, land them on the satellite, and then in a small rocket, and then fly them safely back to Earth using less processing power than you might find in a digital watch. It does strain plausibility a little bit.
But also, why haven't they gone back?
Yeah, well, I think
that we know of anyway.
Well, this movie answers that question for you. It tells you why they didn't go back. Am I right in thinking that the Transformers movies always pick up on a kind of a world event, like a modern thing? So this one is moon landings, and then there's the other movies are, I've forgotten what they are, but there's something else. They're
pyramids.
And what's the first one? Can't remember.
Probably the Roosevelt Dam.
Yes.
Or Hoover Dam. That's Hoover the one I'm Dam. Thinking of. Yeah. Hoover Dam.
They all mean a thing. And they said they pick up on like real things and then develop them from there. As a controversial.
I don't know if there's any more.
I don't know. I'm sure I read something like that.
Oh, hang on. Stonehenge in the fifth film that I choose to believe doesn't exist is, I think the planet is Unicron or something stupid like that.
Okay, let's move on to trivia, because I'm sure there's lots of trivia in this movie.
Actually, my sort of out-of-pocket take references something I wanted to bring up, is that this film could take place in the same universe as Chuck.
Really? Explain.
Theoretically. Did you notice in the scene where Sam has the job and he says, oh, there's a red cup on the yellow floor, the guy who puts the cup in the bin is Jeff from Chuck.
I did notice that. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And then later on, there's a scene that he's in where some guy in the office or the meeting says, I don't want to hear any more from Chuck.
Wow.
This film could be set in the Chuck universe somehow.
Well, now you've said it, I think it probably is.
It has to be, right?
I'd love it for that to be true.
I'm going to say it is.
By the way, while we're on the Chuck theme, when will we get a Chuck movie?
Well, apparently Warner Brothers is up for sale, so I don't know if it'll ever happen.
That's a shame. It does need to happen, though.
I'll buy Warner Brothers and I'll make the movie.
Fine.
Problem solved.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely the first thing that comes out of the new Warner Brothers, Chuck, the movie. Yeah. Anyway.
Chuck versus the movie, yeah.
Chuck versus anyway, the movie. Yeah.
One of my bits of trivia confirms what I said earlier. It's the island that the scene was taken from, the film from 2005 for the highway battle. Uh-huh. That's what I was referring to. Despite having a decent amount of screen time and dialogue, Megatron doesn't actually meet Optimus Prime until the last 6 minutes of the movie and does not meet Sam at all.
Wow.
Which is really weird if you think about it, because in my head, that happens a lot in this movie.
You know, when you kind of imagine things, and I do this a lot when you're watching the movie, right? Imagine Megatron's a real person and he's an actor and he gets his script. Yeah. And he's like, oh, well, have you got your new script, Megatron? Yeah, we'll send it over. We'll send it over with a courier. So Megatron's going, right, first thing you do when you get, I'll look for my lines. There aren't any lines. Hang on a second. I'm not even the leader of the Decepticons anymore. Hang on. Wait. I only appear on the last four pages. And then when I appear on the last four pages, I end up being a good... Well, hang on. And you've got Megatron's on the phone to his lawyer. demanding rewrites.
The fact that they scrap this entire concept as well by the end of the fourth film is ridiculous too.
Yeah. But I guess if Nimoy is available to be, yeah, to, true. Do you know what I mean? So the he's on the phone to his lawyer. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry, Megatron. But you know, Nimoy was available. He's like, fine, whatever.
Again.
Yeah. They should have had Shatner as Megatron. That would have fixed it.
Or just have him play Sam Witwicky and see if anyone notices. They did it for the other one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I know this. We should mention that this is Shia LaBeouf's last outing in these movies.
That's true. Well, last for now. Who knows? Yeah. He might come back in whatever movie Michael Bay decides to make. I'd be there for it.
I'd be up for that.
If they brought everyone back.
Yeah.
Although apparently in universe he's dead. That is mentioned in the fifth one again. I pretend it doesn't exist.
The fifth one doesn't matter. It's not a real film.
Exactly. Do you know I had to see that film a second time at the cinema just to make sure if it was bad or not? And for some reason, my theoretical sister actually came with me the second time, and I don't know why.
Just to check whether or not your views on the badness of the movie are accurate. Yeah. Do you have a sister?
Somewhat. Yeah. I think.
I'm broadly aware of that. Yeah. Broadly.
Yeah. Apparently, and this is something I appreciated, for the 3D versions of the film, to help counter the recent trend of audiences being underwhelmed by the dark look in 3D, they invented various post-production processes to make it more vibrant and to make it more vibrant and enhance the sharpness. I'm trying not to read it directly, okay?
I bet you got through it brilliantly. Do you want to do it again?
No.
Okay.
I'd rather just leave it in like that.
I do think that there's a little period of time. I think we may have mentioned this before, maybe even mentioned it a week or so ago when we were talking about other movies. But there's a period of time in which you can now tell that every movie was shot in or was shot to be shown in 3D. And it's so obvious that it almost ruins parts of the movie.
I remember 3D being such a gimmick, specifically for the third film, that when the second one came out, I was always like, oh, apparently there's rumours the third one will be in 3D, which is like obvious looking back. But that's the way it was.
And the 3D thing was underwhelming.
Yeah, they don't really do it anymore.
No, it's just a thing that never worked. And, you know, it kind of, you can't change the medium. You can do your best. You know, you can do smell-o-vision and the seats that move and spray water on you. And I also saw one of the Spider-Man movies where it was kind of like almost like 360 because part of the movie was on the wall down either side of me.
Oh, yeah. But, I hate that.
Yeah, was it 4X or something it was called? I can't remember what it was called, but...
ScreenX, maybe?
Something like that. But you can't change the medium. Yeah. You can't change the medium. The medium is a photographic medium and it's 2D. And the best directors know how to work within that framework.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
In this universe, Autobots have blue eyes and Decepticons have red eyes. I've never noticed that Sentinel Prime starts with blue eyes, but they get more purple throughout the film, which sort of represents his allegiance. Apparently, before the final sequence, they once again return to blue. It's something I've never noticed before, because I've probably never paid attention to that.
I would never have noticed that before, but it is that attention to detail that you often get in movies that kind of... And there's a theory about that, isn't there, where you don't consciously recognize it, but it that information is going in. But I can't remember what that theory is now. Were there any Wilhelm screams in this movie?
No, as far as I'm aware, no.
And any comedy knows?
I think the whole film's a comic now. There's some comic optimuses.
There's it's 2.5 hours comedy, no, isn't it? No. Shia, stop shouting for heaven's sake. Oh, heavens to Megatroid. There we go.
Last bit of trivia is that Ironhide, who obviously dies by rust, in the first movie he says, "This is going to rust," when the dog pees on him. Little did he know, that's how he'd go out.
Why is that funny?
It's terrible. They shouldn't have done that.
They shouldn't have done that to Paul.
Killing Ironhide was a big mistake.
It was a big mistake. Yeah, absolutely. He was a good... I liked Ironhide.
Yeah, he didn't have much to do, but you knew he was there.
Well, he was there to die.
Actually, at one point, Ratchet, the ambulance, I was like, oh yeah, he's in this movie. Just randomly in the background.
Yeah.
I forgot he was there.
Well, the movie isn't about the other Transformers so much in this, is it? It's essentially a story of Sentinel Prime.
Exactly, yeah.
Should we move on to our scores for this movie?
I think we should, yeah.
I chose the movie, and therefore I get
to... You did.
Astonishingly. So I will try and be brief, because I listened back to an episode of our podcast. I can't remember why I did it. But then, and I said, I'm doing it again. I said, I'll be brief. And then I spoke for about 25 minutes, and I said the same thing over and over again. So so sorry, listeners, if you had to listen to that awful guff. So I will be brief. I gave it 3, mostly because I didn't remember it. I don't think this film is much better than a 3, but I am actually going to give it a 7. And I'm going to give it a 7 because I really like Transformers movies. I'd forgotten this one. I can forgive it its, I'll rephrase it. I can't forgive it its awkward sexual politics and gender politics.
Yeah.
I can't forgive its weak script. And I can't forgive the first 45 minutes where I was questioning my life choices. But for the last hour and a half, I was just a thrill ride. So 7.
I think I'll also try and be brief, because I think I can end up ranting quite a bit for my score. But I agree with everything that you've said. No, I do enjoy this movie. I think I like its action sequences. It's one of those where I can just revisit the action sequences and still have a clue of what's going on with the movie, because that's all you really need. But I think it's a good laugh. I enjoyed it. It's a rare occasion where I managed to watch it in 2 sittings. I probably would have watched it all the way through, time dependent.
Yeah.
But I love the soundtrack. I love the movie. Special effects. It holds a place in my childhood heart. I think I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
Okay. Yeah, it's just fun, isn't it? You know, and but it was also the end of my Transformers journey. I have not seen, I know for certain that I have not seen any of the others. And I did think, maybe I should watch some of the others.
Well, I will say, I think this could be controversial, because I know a lot of people disagree. I think Transformers 4 is my favorite one.
Wow.
But don't watch it, because if we inevitably do the benefit of foresight, I want to do that with you.
Okay.
I mean, I can't stop you, I suppose, but that is something I would like to visit.
Okay. So, definitely, I'll hang on to that one. There we go. So that gives this movie 2 7s. So that's gone up. So we've gone from a kind of aggregate score of 4.5 to an aggregate score of 7. So it's done quite well.
It's quite good.
It's done better than I expected.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, if we'd both given it a 1, nobody would be surprised, would they?
No. I was surprised you gave it a 7, to be honest.
I'll go back. I'm going to repeat. I am going to make one repetition, and that is, because we said this on the previous Transformers episode, Michael Bay knows what he's doing. He makes movies for 15-year-old boys. And somewhere when we watch this movie, I think it rediscovers the 15-year-old boy inside of all of us. And that's great. Why not? Why not have that fun? So what would be your one-word review of this movie?
I think I'm going to go with the word epic.
Good one.
And I think that's because I think it is a bit of an epic. But you can leave it to your own interpretation. You could make it epic fail. Epic movie, although we do have to watch that
we
one.
Do.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Epic action. Do you know what I mean? So I'm going to go with epic, because it's up to interpretation.
Epic is good. I'm just going to call it shouty.
Yeah, that's
because
good.
Because that's what it is, for good and bad.
That should be a genre. Shouty epic.
Shouty epic. We should just make a movie called Shouty Epic.
Yeah, and it's just 2 people shouting.
Okay, let's move on to next week's movie, and it is your choice this time.
It is. I struggled. I also struggled to find a movie. No, I looked down our extensive list, and obviously the start of the list, a little inside here, is a lot of the kiddie ones that I would have seen very young. And towards the end, you get a bit more grown up. So I was trying to stay towards the end. And I really didn't know what I wanted to go for. But I've chosen, sort of taken a leaf out of your book. That's not the right phrase. I'm sticking with it.
Fine.
And I thought, I'm going to pick a film that I don't actually fully remember.
Okay.
So I have a weird... We saw this film at the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the few occasions where we were late, but it didn't really matter.
Right.
And I only ever rewatch these films if they're on at Christmas. I don't go out of my way to do it.
Okay.
And I should get to the point here. It's the 2010 animated classic, How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. I'm good with that. Recently released as a live action remake, as I recall, which I haven't seen. I have to say.
No, it gives me the excuse to see it. When I searched for this film, though, I almost clicked the live action one because it's basically shot for shot, which is weird. Yeah, so I'm interested. But I'm interested to watch the animated one.
Yeah.
First, yeah.
Okay. So what would be your score for that? You forgot to do the most important part.
I felt like I was talking too much. No, it's so fine. I wanted you to come in and say something. So it's all good.
Go on.
I don't know, because I don't remember this and don't have a memory. Like, I get what the story is. I kind of want to put it right in the middle and say 5, but I don't remember being fully impressed about it. So I'm going to say 4 out of 10.
It's interesting that you say you don't remember being fully impressed about it. I seem to remember this movie as being one that you actually liked and enjoyed, and there may well have been some dragon toys.
Right.
But I could be mistaken. I mean, there were so many.
Well, I think... Just to jump in there, I think I don't know if I'd read the book, but I was aware of what the book was, and the film didn't match that. But there was another similar dragon book that I got into, so I don't know if it sort of sparked that. So you might be right.
I don't recall. I do remember seeing the movie, and I do think you're right in as much as it's one that we would have watched again, but probably didn't go out of our way to watch again.
Yeah,
there are definitely shades of Aragon in this movie in terms of its plot as well.
True.
I don't want to be predictable and go with what you've said, but I think I'm going to go 4 as well, because I remember it just being a fun animated movie that we watched and moved on to something else. So it's a 4.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to watching it.
Me too.
It will also be good to watch a movie that doesn't require 17 different sit-ins.
Exactly.
I'm sure this is... it's probably a four-hour version of this movie somewhere, and I've just cursed ourselves there. So, okay. So Sam and I will go away, and we will re-watch the 2010 classic movie How to Train Your Dragon, which we've given an overall memory score of 4. Let's see if that has changed. Do you know what day is today, Sam?
I have 2 things for today.
Go on.
Yeah. So it's Mole Day.
It's what do you want now?
And mole. I don't know if it means like the blemish or the animal.
Let's go.
Is a mole a blemish?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let's go. Shall we go with the animal?
Yeah.
Because
not a spy.
That's kind of it could be a celebration of moles. Or it could be a celebration of spies, or I just looked it up. It's an unofficial holiday celebrated amongst chemists on the 23rd of October between 6:02 a.m. and 6:00 p.m., making the date 6:02/2023, which is approximately the Avogadro constant. Blah 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 blah. It's not. It's none of the things that we thought it was.
Should we skip to the other one? It's International Snow Leopard Day.
Yay! Oh, we love a snow leopard. Ooh. There we go. Do you celebrate?
Yes. I do, actually, yeah. Yesterday was Caps Lock Day.
Was what he want now?
Caps Lock, like the computer button.
I thought you said Cap Sock.
That too, if you want.
Yeah. What is Caps Lock Day?
Captain America's socks.
Captain America's socks.
I asked about it, actually. I asked AI about it. And it was the day to celebrate Caps Lock. So you have to write everything in Caps Lock. And if you don't read it as if you're shouting, you're doing it wrong.
Wow. You know, we just went through that long thing about Mole Day, which hopefully you'll cut out because it wasn't very interesting.
Yeah. Oh.
Can we mark this day as actually being Mole Day? So we like pufflings, we like otters. Why not add moles to the mix?
That's true. Yeah.
So
it could easily be saying mold. Yay.
Yeah, mold A. So if you celebrate Snow Leopard Day or indeed Mole Day, please enjoy, but enjoy responsibly because it's you still have to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
And well, talking of things that must come to an end, it's time. That's not the way to finish our podcast. Where am I going with that? Let's just say that even though we didn't have a listener question, we have so many. We're so backed up with listener questions now. It's ridiculous, but do keep them coming at the Benefit of Hindsight Podcast at gmail.com. Thank you, by the way, for your responses to our Two Towers episode. We've been overwhelmed. So thank you so much for tuning in. We really, really appreciate it. It's only time now for me to say to Sam, happy Mole Day and bye-bye.
Happy Mole Day. Bye.
Also snow leopards.
Also snow leopards, yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Bicycle.
Race.
Oh. Mm.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?